You know what that music means? It's time for our weekly chat with Timmy Hasselbeck. NHL schedule, starting to come out. We have learned the Predators' first road game, where they will start off their season. I just gave you the hint. It's going to be on the road. And their first home game. They will begin, Willie, congratulations. You're going to Beantown to kick off the regular season. They will be in Boston to take on the Bruins October the 5th. The first home game back here in Smashville will be against the Philadelphia Flyers. How about that?
October 10th, Tuesday night.
That's an interesting way to start off the season.
Yeah, start a little West versus East. There's a lot of that around the league. So that'll get the season off to a good jump start there.
Yeah.
Two high-profile teams from the East.
I want to ask you guys a question once we finish with Tim. And I'm going to ask why Tim's on.
Well, let's clarify something, because we had took some calls last hour about this situation with the Bears season ticket holder who was upset once the Bears had changed their policy. And it was a good question raised. Was this person, Mr. Beckman, was he informed that he could not show up wearing the opposition's gear? Well, in the story, digging a little deeper, less than a week out before the game, he received an email from the Bears stating fans could not partake in the event while wearing opposing team gear.
You are the weakest link.
Case closed.
Well, case closed for that year, but what he's doing is he's suing and saying you shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, well, I hope he loses and loses badly and fast.
Well, we all
shouldn't even
that.
Entertain it. Shouldn't even be a case.
I agree. I don't know why he's entertaining it, but I think from a legal standpoint, there'll be some lawyer that says, we can win this. We can win if you'll pay me.
Tim, I'm sure you've seen this story. We had a lot of calls on, is it right for teams to tell fans, hey, you can't partake in something like an on-the-field event, or we used a hockey reference, being on the Zamboni during an intermission in the opposing gear. What's your take?
I think if you're going to participate in something other than access to the stadium, then the team has every right to kind of dictate what you can and can't have on. I mean, I'll never forget, having teammates who maybe have like family members or relatives or friends or whatever come stand on the sideline for pregame warmups and stuff. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I'm playing for the Giants at the time. And it's like, why does that dude have a McNabb jersey on standing on the sideline? That seems kind of weird that he would have that kind of access, and be on our sideline. So I don't have any problem with the teams dictating kind of beneficial access, to people, but having restrictions associated with it.
Do you think he's going to lose and lose quickly?
I do, and I kind of agree with you that I hope that I hope he suffers through the loss of it. Yes.
Yeah, it's just it's just silly. I mean, why is it any different? I use the example of a restaurant when they say no shoes, no shirt, no service. I mean, it's their right to tell you whether you want to wear shoes or not.
Does that apply to D-Mace? Do we know?
That's a good point. I don't know if he still tries to.
Well, I'm on my own property.
Buck the system.
I'm on my own property.
Yeah. What if it's no medium shirts?
Honestly,
hey, I can't help it if I look good, man.
Yeah. You're gonna be hungry.
He said when he got back from his vacation on Monday's show, he said, I just looked in the mirror and I said, man, I still look good. And I was like, did you really need to question that? I mean, you kind of already told us. By the way, he didn't get a tan in Puerto Rico. We did learn that. He did not get a tan in Puerto Rico.
Let me tell you something. I follow D-Mace on social media, and I was just like, oh, man, guy's on vacation at the beach, at the pool. Like, my feed is just going to be filled with pictures of D-Mace. But he didn't do that to me, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, he saved it for us every day. Just thinking about you guys. Oh, well, that's nice. Great. You're shot at the beach.
Speaking of thinking about you guys, I heard the schedule for the Preds. And listen, I want to tell you, I think it's wicked pisser that you're going to be at the Garden to start the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get down to Faneuil Hall to get some chowder.
Well, I can't wait. I love when we get the extra day in Boston.
I'll let Oki and Sully know that you're going to be there, all right?
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Is this like a bad Mark Wahlberg movie? What did we just break out into?
Donnie Wahlberg was the narrator in the 30 for 30 Celtics-Lakers. And, of course, Ice Cube was the Lakers guy. And Donnie Wall, it's designed that they're actually characters, right? They're not doing this as themselves. They're doing it as a guy from Boston or as a guy from L.A. So there are times where Donnie Wahlberg really goes into that mode that Tim just did, just going full-on Boston accent.
I think Donnie is pretty true to character from what I can what I remember. I mean,
are you saying he's wound up a little tight?
Maybe so. Yes. Listen, if you were part of New Kids on the Block, chances are, you're pretty dialed into that at all times.
Yeah, it wasn't a big stretch for him to go into that Boston accent. No. I don't think for him.
What did you think of the Titans signing Eric Decker? Tim?
You know, I liked it, and I think that going back to our conversation last week. About their ability to sign him. Look, I think it's pretty, I think I saw the number, like 1 year, like $3.85 million or something like that. This is that guy that was due, I believe, around $7 million bucks from the Jets, okay? He, I believe, is still a very good player. I think he's a good match in terms of, the other guys that they've added at the position that are younger, I think he'll be a good guy to have in the receiver room. I think he'll still give you production. And honestly, I think that they got him cheaper because of his circumstances. And we kind of touched on it last week that, look, that's a good thing. I mean, I last week said it was like, well, so what's it going to cost? $5 million. So maybe you can get him for $4 million. Look, you're getting him for less than that, and I think that when you just look at experience and production, along with the guys that they've had there, I like the fit quite a bit.
What do you think he fits in as? Is he the one? Is he the two? Is he the three? Is he the four? What is he?
Yeah. So I think he's a two. I think depending on the situation, you could almost qualify him as a 1B, depending on the situation. Here's what I'd say, and I have a hard time kind of, forecasting, catches or production for Titans wide receivers. I think is, we kind of get ramped up for the fantasy season as well, and you're trying to forecast it out. Because, look, they're a run-first offense. Marcus's development obviously is going to have a lot to do with it. His health is going to have a lot to do with it. But I think for the Titans, he fits in more as a number one type receiver than a number two receiver. And I say that just based on his size, his strength, his ability to be on the field as much as anybody they have in every personnel grouping. Like when they have one wide receiver out on the field because they're in a short yard situation, he's got every, he's as likely as any other receiver to be out there. Same thing, in certain, inside the 10-yard line packages, things like that. And so I think he's going to end up, assuming he's healthy, playing a bunch of snaps. And does he have the ability to catch, over 70 balls for them? I don't know. Maybe it gets spread around a little bit more and it's around, 60 balls. Can he have 6 touchdown catches? I think that he can. Is he a double-digit touchdown guy like he's been earlier in his career? Probably not in that offense. But I do think he's a good fit in that he's an all-around guy who seems fairly committed to doing what he's doing. And I think, some of the younger guys probably can learn a little bit from him. So I think he's a good match that way.
How much should they expect out of Corey Davis as a first-year receiver? We got into this yesterday, and Derek was kind of breaking down, you know, the approach is different today than maybe back. Remember, there was used to be back in the day, it'd be like, oh, it's going to take like year three before a receiver can really get things going. What's your take on what's realistic for Corey Davis, first year, fifth pick overall?
Yeah. So here's what I'll do, and I know that you know, I talked to you guys earlier this year, right around the draft, I guess right after it, you know, where Lewis Riddick really, you know, spoke extremely highly of him and what he could be in terms of run after the catch and kind of where he is now. And so I think the expectation, especially when you talk about where he was drafted, you know, the expectation should be similar to the expectations that people had for Amari Cooper when he went to Oakland and said, yeah, we don't care that, you know, he's young and he was, you know, it's a different game and you've got to have the ability to get off the line of scrimmage. You've got to have the ability to, you know, be somebody that even if when you attract coverage, be able to get open and make plays, but to be a number one. And I think that the Titans should have the expectation based on where they drafted him, what the guy's physical, you know, just his God-given ability is, that he ends up being their number one. You know, I mean, I think that should be the expectation right away. And if it's not, then I think there's a bit of an admission at that point that, okay, maybe he's not nearly as ready as we thought he was, because if you're drafting somebody that high, you think he's pretty ready. And I'll say this, too. If you're going to be the number one guy for the Titans, listen, Tajae Sharpe has proved that he can be very good inside but also has the ability to play outside. Decker's going to give you that same ability. You're not going to be the only guy that's a viable pass-catching option, you know, in that passing game. And then you obviously factor in the tight end position as well. So I don't think that being the number one for the Titans is as burdensome as it is other places.
All right, we'll come back with more. But before we come back, I want to read something to you. They've asked us today after the show to do some, you know, some like readers for promoting things on the show. So this is what I have. I've been in charge of you, so this will probably make Chase really
jealous.
Which
is a big mistake to start with. Yeah, I don't think Tim would have endorsed that.
Why?
Because you're always banging on Tim. It should be Chase.
It
is, for sure.
You're always Benny from the Bronx on Tim.
I am not banging on Tim.
Well, not now.
I respect Tim. I appreciate Tim. And I don't know what you guys are talking about.
All right, so what do you have?
This is what we have for you. You tell me if this is acceptable.
Tim, you have every right to veto this.
You can change it if you want. I'm giving you the opportunity to change the copy before we do this after the show. Hey, this is Darren McFarland. Each week, we take a trip around the league with one of the best NFL minds in the biz. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins 3D for a full half hour every Wednesday at noon on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I feel like you could gush a little bit more.
Gush a little bit more?
I mean, like bring what? It from the, like bring it from the heart.
You got to bring it from the heart.
It needs to be from the heart.
From the stomach,
well,
from the belly.
I was reading it fast.
I heard no mention that we were best friends in there.
Yeah, no mention that he and Chase were best friends. Come on.
What does that have to do with the promo of
everything.
Wednesdays at noon?
Everything.
You know, I just feel
why
like,
is he on?
I just feel like if Chase could read it, be like, you know, in the best part of my week, in our week together, you know, the highlight of my day and week, you know, to spend some quality time with friends. Something I just
I know,
like
but I don't. We don't want this promo to be like it's going to be aired on Hallmark.
It's
kind of
like the
okay?
Folgers commercial.
We don't want that. All right,
it's
we
like
want
the Folgers
to,
commercial. Come on.
Yeah, but if Chase,
the best
does,
part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. You gotta. When I hear that, it's like I want coffee. Come on, that's how it's got to be, man.
I feel like, Darren, I couldn't even tell if it was you or that comedian Stephen Wright reading that. You know what I mean?
What?
No emotion at all.
What? All right, I will work on that.
Work on your delivery.
I've got an hour and a half or so to work on my delivery, and we will give you the final product next Wednesday. How about that?
All right, I look forward to it.
More with Tim Hasselbeck next. I was still laughing during the break for you calling me Stephen Wright, by the way. That was funny.
Hey, Tim, then he hung up on you.
Then he hung up on me. Like, yeah.
And that was Darren. Make no mistake about it.
Exactly.
Lack of respect.
I usually just patiently wait on hold during the break, you know, listen to the commercials that are playing. But I hope the listeners know that after that exchange that Darren then hung up on me.
And that he did.
I mean,
I'm not going to tell you what he said after he hung up on you. That's what he gets.
I think I said, oh, crap.
Oh, crap, that's what he gets.
Something like that. No, I did not say this is what he gets. Do not stir the pot.
You're on edge because of Little League playoffs, aren't you?
Yeah, we did have an incident last night. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Did you?
Yeah. They lost a hard-fought game.
Evidently, the ump listens to the show. Whoops.
Whoops, I'm sorry.
Did he up with him in the show?
Well, he tweeted at me this morning. So I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll tell you later.
Talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, going back to the Eric Decker, and I mentioned this to the guys as I did last year when they chose to bring in Andre Johnson. And it seemed to have, because we got an opportunity to talk with Rashad Matthews. And he, when Andre chose to retire and his game started to pick up, it did, he did admit that, he had some trouble because Andre was there and he couldn't develop quite the way he wanted to within the offense because there was always that bigger presence there. And I just feel in this situation too, because there's not an easier time. There's never been an easier time than now for a receiver to make a transition from college to the NFL. And I told the guys that because of the rule changes and because now these NFL teams are using this wide open sort of offense that the college level use, and they're incorporating certain things to make guys feel more comfortable. And you see it year after year. You see guys come in, these young receivers in there, 60, 70, 80 catches. So if you're going to draft a guy at number 5, then he needs to come in and be that 60-catch guy. In this offense, it probably would be 60 or 70. If Decker comes in and if he's healthy, if he is your – and remind you, Rashad Matthews was 60 yards from 1,000 yards. If Mariota doesn't get hurt, He gets 1,000 yards. He has like 7, 8 touchdowns. I think he had 9. If he comes in and be your 1 or 2, then someone – there's a problem there to me, at least to me, because this is not 15 years ago in regards to wide receivers. Let him sit. Let him get acclimated to the offense, and then we'll throw him in. They did it to Kevin Dyson long ago. They allowed him to sit for a while, and then they put him in there. Now – you just can't afford to sit a guy, especially when you draft him at 5.
No, and look, I think guys are expected to come in and look at Laquon Treadwell, Minnesota. Like, that's already a disappointment and probably my eyes for a lot of the reasons that you just stated. I think part of it ends up being, what you think Decker is. Like, I think Decker is a better player than Matthews, but I actually would prefer Eric Decker to Jeremy Maclin. I think part of it depends on like what you think Eric Decker is right now. Like, how do you see Decker, D-Mate?
I can't see him a 1 or 2 based on one. I told the guys this. I'm the injuries. I'm scared of that. Rotate a couple and hip injury more. But obviously the Titans cleared him, they signed him, they cleared him. But still, the hip injury to me is more of a factor than the rotator cup. And you bring in Rashad Matthews, who's your number one receiver, and then you draft a guy at 5. So to me, at best, he's your 3. And then you got to factor in Tajae Sharpe. So that's what I'm saying. If he cracks that, which he might, I'm not saying he won't. If he cracks that starting rotation, we need to really think about, how we evaluate our players. Because we just brought a guy in, we drafted him five, we brought another guy in the following, you know, year before, and we're paying him, you know, $5 million a year.
Yeah, look, I look at the way they, again, I mean, maybe part of it is I'm making an assumption on some of what Decker, you know, decided to take, but you look at what they're paying Decker and how quickly that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think they see him as somebody that really helps. You know, and I think Decker, listen, I think in terms of what you see, I'm surprised that you don't think Decker's even a three.
I'm basing it on one.
Tajay Sharp being there as well.
The injury history, the this past season's injury in the hip. And then two, what they've done as far as loading up their roster with young players who they think can play. When you bring in a free agent guy that you make him their number one receiver, then you draft a guy at five. So I'm thinking those two guys right off the bat are your one and two, because Rashad did prove he can handle the load.
Yeah.
And then you bring him in. So at best, he's your three.
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess the way I would look at it, and I think it is different than, you know, a year ago with Andre Johnson. Mm-hmm. Like to me, Andre Johnson was really dumb the year before.
Exactly.
You know, he just couldn't run. And, like, he didn't even look like the same player. You know, I mean, it was one of those situations where you say, oh, you hope the guy kind of leaves before, you know, it looks like he should have left. And, see, I don't know that that's the case with Decker. You know, I guess time will tell in terms of what he looks like running in camp and all that stuff. But I think if you look at some of the production that he's had in the past and some of the quarterbacks that he's played with in the past and what his production was with some of these guys that have struggled, I think that's another reason why, you know, I kind of see him as a fit. I hope I'm right and you're wrong, in the sense that I think if they get production that he's put out other places, I think that would be a pretty big deal for, you know, just the landscape of the Titans offense and the type of production they've got from guys in the past.
Well, I hope I'm wrong too, because I just want the Titans to advance to the playoffs and do what the Predators did this past season. So in a sense, I think I'm wrong too, but how do you think – And this is kind of why at the beginning of the last year I said you can't take a guy who's been there, who's been a starter all his career, and make him a three. They don't operate that way. I've been through it. I thought I could do it. I went to New York and I said, you know what? I could have possibly stayed in Baltimore and could have been the one or the two. I chose to go to Baltimore after they cut me. I chose to go to the Jets. I thought I could be a three. I'm like, I can do it, you know, I can do it, I can catch it. I couldn't do it because I was so accustomed to starting, and I had a regiment that was built in, and I had to be in the floor. So how will Decker run into the same thing? Do you say, he'll be fine?
Listen, everybody that's listening to you that has just been like, oh, look at, you know, hey, wide receiver, you know, diva, you're not alone. Like, maybe the most the situation that's maybe gotten as much attention in a situation like that would be Joey Galloway. Remember when Joey Galloway went to – where did he go, to Washington? Where did he go?
I think he ended up in Washington. Yeah.
Well, he went up to Washington, and, like, look, like, it was clear they liked him, they wanted him, but he was the third. He was like, no, I can't do this. I can't stand on the sideline for 17 minutes and then run in and run around and then come up back on and stand on the sideline for 12 more minutes. And I just can't do it. Like, he physically just said, like, my body isn't set up to work like that anymore. I don't think that that's Decker's situation. I don't think that's his approach. We got to say, Decker, you know, he played on an offense in Denver with Tebow as the quarterback. You know, it's not like this guy is coming into, you know, coming to the Titans with a resume like yours when you went to the Jets. Like that's not the – it's not the same situation. I think that I think he's much more prepared to not mm-hmm. be the focal point okay. based on situations he's been to in the past.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And, Tim, the way I look at it from afar is there's a lot of different ways that this could work and just add another nice little weapon for Marcus Mariota. I see an offense that has a lot of different ways to be very, very effective, regardless of who is in what role, as long as everybody can accept whatever role shakes out. So as you look at them now, and they continue to piece together what they're going to be in the preseason here, what are your thoughts on what the expectation level is?
Look, they're in the building 100%. They should feel like we should win this division. I don't think there's any doubt that is a realistic goal, for the Titans. And honestly, the fan base as well. Look, there are some places where that's not the realistic goal. Like, it's not the realistic goal for the Bills or the Jets or the Dolphins. It's not a realistic goal for, the Rams or there's just certain teams. It's not possible. The Bears aren't winning the NFC North. They can legitimately win the division. Andrew Luck hasn't thrown a football in over 3 months. Blake Bortles is still the starter in Jacksonville. Houston doesn't have a quarterback. I mean, so I do think that the realistic expectations, fan base and people in the building, are we should win this division, and if we don't, that's a missed opportunity.
Very interesting. So as you look at the weakness, what would be the number one concern on your end right now? If you're looking around that division, you're saying the biggest weakness of the Titans. I would start on defense, but you tell me what you think.
Yeah, look, I think you can look on the defensive side of the ball and say, you know what, a more consistent pass rush, more playmakers, in the back end, so that when you look up at the end of the year, your takeaway number is higher, all that stuff. I still will, if you really boil it down, I think Marcus's health and development are as crucial as probably anything you can find on the defensive side of the ball or, various things that could happen throughout a season. Because look at the Dallas Cowboys a year ago. Their success, as much as, Ezekiel Elliott, that was great, and he was running the football well and all that stuff, but it was the development of Dak Prescott that really differentiated them from a team that was just running the football really well and being somewhat relevant. Because Dak wasn't turning the football over, and because he was so efficient, their defense was better because they weren't put in tough spots. It obviously helped their running game as well. And they just weren't giving the ball away. And so that's why I still think it always is going to come down to Marcus's ability to be healthy and continue to develop and play better.
I will give you the final product next week. I'll make sure to put a little extra oomph in it today.
I'm happy to join right now by Darren McFarland.
Is that your Stephen Wright impression?
Really, really good to be on with you.
I will work.
Listen, all that trash talking when you're on the road with Willie covering the Preds, I take it all back. I'm really hoping for a good sell, really good sell.
And also next week we're going to have our favorite, each going to have our favorite Stephen Wright joke.
Oh, okay. We can do that too. Tim, have a good week.
Like my favorite, when he said, "You ever wonder if George Washington, when they asked him for his ID, he just pulled out a quarter?"
You would think that was funny.
Hey, I was a little nervous. You guys weren't going to know who Stephen Wright was when I said it.
You thought we were talking about the knuckleballer for the Red Sox?
Yes, exactly.
Hey, good to talk to you. Have a good rest of the week.
All right, see you then.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Wednesday starting at noon. We'll be back.